He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The problem gets individualised.
Power like no one else.
Pretty much identical.
A lot of people read their stories, hear their stories, and kind of individualise it to a problem to them.
She's coming now, she's gaining yard for yard on the two in front. She's just got...
They were the weakest link, or they were not strong enough to handle elite sport.
They make it look easy. New Zealand...
And the problem with that is that we forget to pull back and see that's the problem that's much more common among many athletes in those sports. This is just the one brave athlete who's willing to stand up and speak about it.
Ngā mihi nui, welcome to Our Changing World. Ko Clark and Cannon tēnei. That was the voice of Holly Thorpe, a sociologist in Te Huataki Waiora in the University of Waikato in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton. Now this week, as the 2020 Summer Olympic Games are underway in Tokyo, we bring you a story about a condition called Red S that is affecting many athletes, both elite and amateur. Red S stands for Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport, and it's a condition in which an athlete just doesn't have the energy they need to do the amount of exercise they are doing. So this affects the athlete's performance, but also there can be damaging impacts on the person's body that are wide-ranging and long-lasting. One of the students Holly co-supervises, Katie Schofield, has just completed her PhD on this topic. Also, she herself has been an elite athlete, a track cyclist.
We turn our attention then to the women's team sprint.
My event was sprints, so really focused as being the starter for the team sprint.
And we're underway then, as we see the New Zealand team of Katie Schofield and Natasha Hansen.
So how many years did you cycle for?
So a total of 8 years, being four professional. I came into cycling quite late. I was into track and field before I started cycling.
At uni, Katie studied physical education and human nutrition, doing a bachelor's and then a master's in these areas, before turning her attention full-time to cycling professionally. Her return to study was prompted by her own personal experience.
My PhD uses a mixed method approach to have more of an understanding of low energy availability. What low energy availability is, in simple terms, is your body doesn't have enough dietary energy to sustain normal physiological functioning. And if that happens, then you can have a range of body systems that are impaired. And that can include bone health, menstrual function, endocrine and metabolic function.
Why did you decide to do your PhD in this area?
Yeah, it's a good question. Through my own personal experiences with a syndrome called relative energy deficiency in sport, or Red S. And that was through like the middle of my professional career with track cycling, and it cost me a year out of the sport. And through that year, I really learnt a lot about this syndrome and found that more needed to be known.
From the outside looking in, it seems like a simple maths equation. You eat the calories that you need to do the exercise. And being a professional athlete, are there calculations around the amount of calories that you will expend and the amount of calories that you will take in? Do you do that kind of maths?
It does depend on the athlete. Some athletes don't want to do numbers. Some athletes are really particular. I know in my personal experience, I was very particular in numbers, and I knew what numbers I needed to hit in terms of intake and expenditure. But it gets really tricky because unless you're in a lab and you can really understand someone's exercise expenditure, it's really difficult to then match that with intake. And not everyone has access to a high facility exercise physiology lab to then determine what is the energy output. Because in a lab, you might be at a set, so for example, in cycling, a set wattage, and you know what expenditure that wattage is, but when you're training, you're not at one set wattage for the whole time you're training. So it adds a huge complexity.
So even if you were to do just the maths to figure out how much you should eat, it's very difficult. It can potentially be very tricky to do.
Yeah, it is challenging. And I think, I guess, the biggest point to make here is that every individual needs a set amount of energy just to survive and to live. And then, so that's our baseline. But for athletes, they're expending a lot more because of their training. So there's an extra component that they need to account for their dietary intake. And many individuals are just meeting the baseline energy demands. And that might just be through lack of awareness, or it just might be that their training volumes are intense or long, and it shortens the window of their ability to eat.
So you could do this maths if you had careful calculations and you were doing controlled levels of exercise in the lab. I mean, there are numbers around this. So your optimal energy availability should be more than 45 kilocalories per kilogram of fat-free mass, which is your body weight multiplied by your percentage body fat, per day. So this is the amount of energy that you need available for your body to be healthy and do all its normal things. Of course, real life is messier. And if you consistently drop below this energy availability, it has consequences.
So I guess the first thing was performance plateau. I was removed from the team because of my performances. So it wasn't really until that happened that I went back and to looked in how my body felt and what was actually going on. And one of them was menstrual dysfunction. I didn't have a period for over 2 years. So that was my primary point of recovery, was to get that back, because I just knew if I had that back, then my performances would improve.
Why does that happen, the menstrual dysfunction?
Yeah, so essentially the body is in a starvation state, if you want to put it in that regard. And so the energy that you have in your nutrition, that energy gets put to the exercise that you do first. And then because the body doesn't have enough energy for normal body functions, then it shuts down body systems that are deemed not necessary. And one of them is the menstrual functioning. And just a cascade of like a decrease in particular sex hormones, and then that effectively means that you can lose your menstrual cycle or you have irregular cycles.
For people in whom they have, you know, a very severe case of this, or it goes on for a couple of years unchecked, there are other impacts that it can have on the body, correct?
Yeah, for sure. So, like, for example, estrogen is one of the main key sex hormones, particularly for females, and that might be downregulated if we're not having enough nutrition on board. And so that plays a part in your menstrual function, but also plays a part in bone metabolism. And so that's where athletes can run into the risk of osteoporosis later in life, just because they've had this downregulation in hormones.
Like I said, real life is messier. Because beyond miscalculations of calories and energy in and energy out, there are other reasons that red S might happen. Here's Holly Thorpe again.
It gets more complicated when athletes are intentionally limiting what they eat, and that might be because of body image issues, disordered eating practices, addiction to exercise. And so they're not intentionally trying to go into relative energy deficiency, but they're intentionally restricting what they eat. And that's where it gets much more complicated.
Katie's story has a happy ending. After her year of recovery, she was able to get back on the team and was selected for the 2015 World Championships. And now she is one of those brave athletes that Holly mentioned at the start, who speak about their experience. By telling her story, Katie hopes to spread awareness of Red S. And alongside Holly and the WISPA team, they hope that they can remove some of the damaging myths, like missing your period is a good sign of training hard, or that having reward and punishment type relationships with food is a good thing, And they want to promote a culture where the athlete is looked after fully.
People expect them to be training hard and eating very carefully, etc., to quite extremes sometimes. And people go, oh, that's just because they're an elite athlete. But it doesn't mean that relationship with food or with their body image is necessarily healthy or good for them. It's kind of like a workaholic, right? It's like you get patted on the back for it because you're an athlete or you're working so hard. But actually, at what point does it start damaging your long-term health and well-being? And those people around our athletes, our parents, our coaches, support staff, that's their responsibility. Some of them are paid to be looking out for those athletes, not just as someone who's going to perform well at the next Olympics, but as a human being, and we should be caring about their health and well-being long-term. And unfortunately, even in sporting environments with a full wraparound support, even with sports doctors and nutritionists and psychologists, we're still seeing really high rates. You'd think we'd be catching it, but we're not. That's where the work of Whisper has got to keep ramping it up. We've got much more to do here.
But I think also with the more research that's coming out and the more awareness of this, there are sports and coaches that are doing really positive things in this space, which is really exciting to see.
It's good.
Yeah.
Thanks to Katie Schofield and Holly Thorpe of the University of Waikato. This episode was produced by me, Claire Kincannon. Sound engineering was by Phil Bench. Tim Watkin is the executive producer. I do say this every week, but you should follow the show. Do it so you never miss an episode that will just download straight to your device. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. The show's website is at rnz.co.nz/ourchangingworld. I'll share some photos and links relevant to this chat and where you can go to find out more. And if you want to get in touch with us to let us know your thoughts, please do. We are on Facebook or Twitter at RNZ Science. There are lots of other great podcasts on RNZ to explore. If you click on the podcast and series tab, you can see there's a whole range of them. And I can recommend Voices, a podcast on people from diverse global backgrounds living in New Zealand. In particular, check out the interview with Muslim women athletes during Ramadan. Super interesting. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Claire Kincannon, and I'll be back next week. Kia pai tō wiki.